It's very good to be here again after the presentation that I did here a year ago, and I want to thank ISDA for the invitation and the opportunity to speak. A lot has happened since a year ago. Markets around the world remain under pressure. The sovereign debt crisis is still lingering over us, and fears about the future of the euro continue to weigh on confidence. Australia has been somewhat sheltered from these developments. As we reported in our recent financial stability review, Australian banks' asset quality has continued to hold firm, and banks' funding positions have continued to become more robust. The usage of wholesale funding has been wound back, and banks' overall funding costs have fallen over the past year. While Australia's financial sector and the condition of the real economy remain favourable by international standards, many of the lessons from the global financial crisis remain relevant in Australia as they do around the world. The Australian authorities have continued to be involved in both domestic and international debates over refinements to regulatory settings. The aim, of course, is to reduce the likelihood of further distress and to ensure that in the event that further problems do emerge, that the authorities have appropriate tools to deal with them effectively. Over the past year, the agencies that make up the Council of Financial Regulators in Australia have moved ahead with a number of regulatory initiatives. Included among those, we've been consulting extensively with industry participants on matters such as the implementation of Basel III in Australia, enhancements to the resolution regime for banks, and reforms to the regulation of financial market infrastructure. But today I'm not going to talk about those things, but I'm going to focus again on the area of reform that I talked about here a year ago, which is the regulation of OTC derivatives markets. As everyone here would be aware, the Pittsburgh summit 3 years ago agreed that all standardised OTC derivatives contracts should be traded on exchanges or electronic trading platforms where appropriate and cleared through central counterparties by the end of 2012, and that OTC derivatives contracts should be reported to trade repositories. Also, they agreed that centrally cleared contracts should be subject, that non-centrally cleared contracts should be subject to higher capital requirements. When I spoke here last October, the Council of Financial Regulators was engaged in a consultation on particularly the central clearing aspect of that commitment. I talked about a number of policy challenges that the Council agencies were grappling with, including whether central clearing of Australia's most systemically important OTC derivatives markets should be mandatory and whether such clearing should be required to take place through a domestic central counterparty. Consultation on those matters continued through the remainder of 2011 and into the early part of this year. At the same time, there were some significant developments happening overseas. Arrangements in other international jurisdictions, particularly the United States and Europe, were becoming clearer, and domestic financial institutions were beginning to examine those and adapt to the potential third country reach of the prospective new rules. There was also important work going on at the level of international cooperative regulatory bodies. Partly reflecting views put by the Australian authorities, the Financial Stability Board developed the notion of four safeguards for a resilient global framework for central counterparties. This work recognised that in meeting the G20 commitments, market participants in some jurisdictions may have to rely on offshore-based central counterparties. And so there needed to be a well-considered international framework for dealing with that. Authorities and market participants alike need to have confidence that the international arrangements will protect their interests, both in terms of domestic financial stability and also for the effective functioning of markets. Now, the four safeguards developed and agreed to by the FSB comprised the following: ensuring effective international cooperative oversight of global CCPs, fair and open access criteria, appropriate liquidity arrangements in all relevant currencies, and procedures for effective resolution. The CPSS and IOSCO developed a set of principles for financial market infrastructures, which was released in April this year, and these embed some of the four safeguards, some of the elements from the four safeguards. Other elements that have been agreed by the FSB have been left to national authorities to implement within their own national regulatory frameworks. But they're all agreed at the international level. So all of that was happening at the time that we were consulting over the framework, particularly in relation to clearing of OTC derivatives in Australia. Having considered the views of stakeholders through the consultation process and also assessed the implications of these international developments, the Council of Financial Regulators delivered a set of policy recommendations to the Deputy Prime Minister and Treasurer in March this year, and that was published shortly thereafter. The recommendations had three main elements. Recommendation number one was don't mandate immediately in these areas, but establish the power to do so. The council agencies recommended that where possible, industry-led solutions, and in part these would reflect appropriate regulatory incentives, but industry-led solutions should be relied upon in the first instance to steer the market towards the desired outcomes. Nevertheless, the council recommendations recognise that the authorities would need to have a legislated power to mandate outcomes in the event that progress towards those outcomes was not satisfactory within an appropriate time frame. One concern would be if there were perceived to be an opportunity for regulatory arbitrage between the Australian regime and other jurisdictions. Another would be if, in assessing the sufficient equivalence of the Australian regime, other jurisdictions were to take into account whether or not there was an effective mandate in place in Australia. Now, within this overall framework, we see reliance in the first instance on market incentives as being particularly relevant in the case of central clearing. Early regulatory intervention on that front we see as having the potential to interfere with the competitive and commercial responses of central counterparties and clearing participants and other service providers. A flexible approach, we believe, should allow for the transition to occur with maximum choice available to participants on issues such as the commercial terms of agreements, the choice of counterparties and central counterparties, and operational changes that might be needed. The Council's assessment was that higher capital requirements for non-centrally cleared transactions, as well as the effect of implementation of the emerging standards for margin requirements on non-cleared OTC derivatives, should create a sufficiently strong set of economic incentives to channel trades over time through a central counterparty. Once a critical mass of market participants has begun to clear centrally, the momentum in that direction seems likely to be self-sustaining as other participants who wish to trade with participants who are already clearing centrally will come under pressure to move in the same direction. And also to the extent that financial institutions headquartered in other jurisdictions are actually required to centrally clear, that will provide an additional impetus in the same direction. So that was the first recommendation from the Council to the Minister. Don't mandate immediately, but establish the power to do so. The second recommendation was that a qualifying central counterparty for meeting these requirements could be either domestic or overseas based. A central counterparty operating in Australia must have either an Australian clearing and settlement facility licence or a valid exemption. The regulatory regime in Australia specifically permits an overseas-based central counterparty to operate in this jurisdiction as long as its home regulatory regime is deemed to be sufficiently equivalent to that in Australia. The consultation last year sought views on whether it should be mandated that any central counterparty clearing OTC derivatives markets deemed to be systemically important in Australia should be required to be located in Australia. Having given that further serious consideration during the consultation process, the council agencies concluded that to do so would unduly constrain market participants' choices, would reduce the effectiveness of economic incentives in driving outcomes, and potentially could have other unintended consequences. In the Council's view, any additional risks associated with reliance on an overseas-based central counterparty can be managed effectively through implementation of the Financial Stability Board's four safeguards, which I mentioned earlier. Very much in the spirit of those safeguards, the Council has developed and published a framework for regulatory influence over cross-border clearing and settlement facilities. Specific requirements would be expected to be applied in a graduated and proportionate fashion, which takes into account the systemic importance of the particular market that's being dealt with. And the requirements that we've set out include the following. First of all, that all licensed CCPs must demonstrate legal compatibility of the facility's rules with Australian regulatory objectives and have adequate mechanisms to demonstrate compliance with all of its licence obligations. Secondly, that where licensed CCPs have material Australian-based participation or provide services in Australian-related products, they must have governance and operational arrangements in place that promote stability of the Australian financial system. A third one is that where a CCP is deemed to be systemically important to the Australian financial system by the Reserve Bank, it must hold an exchange settlement account at the bank in order to better manage liquidity and settlement risks around its Australian dollar obligations. The Australian regulators are also closely engaged with ongoing international work on the recovery and resolution of financial market infrastructure. This work will be a key input into the development of a fully articulated recovery and resolution regime for financial market infrastructure in Australia. It will also establish a benchmark for assessment of the recovery and resolution regimes applicable to overseas-based facilities seeking to establish operations in Australia. So that was the second recommendation, that a qualifying central counterparty for the purposes of this regulatory regime could be either domestic or overseas-based. And the third recommendation was to establish a licensing regime for trade repositories in Australia. This is to be largely modelled on the existing licensing regimes for market operators and for clearing and settlement facilities under the Corporations Act. ASIC is the agency that will have primary responsibility for administering this regime and overseeing any trade repositories that become licensed under the regime. So those were the three recommendations from the Council, and those three recommendations have since been reflected in draft legislation issued by Treasury for consultation that was issued in July and introduced to Parliament in September this year. It's anticipated that the framework will be in place by year end. Under the proposed framework, the Minister for Financial Services and Superannuation will have the power to prescribe certain classes of derivatives as being subject to mandatory reporting to a trade repository, mandatory clearing by a central counterparty, or mandatory execution on a trading platform. To give effect to any mandate, ASIC will be given the task of developing what are called derivatives transactions rules, and those rules will clarify the detailed matters such as the institutional and product scope of the obligation that's being put in place. Among the regulators, therefore, it's ASIC that will have the primary role in implementing the new framework, but in doing so, it will work closely with the Reserve Bank and APRA, and the Reserve Bank itself does have some significant roles envisaged under the new regime. In particular, we see three main functions for the bank under this regime. One is the market monitoring function. In carrying out its market operations and in its financial stability role, the RBA will need to understand the implications of market developments in response to the new rules for OTC derivatives, and in particular the evolution of participant behaviour and the participation structure of the market. We envisage that this will include the analysis of data sourced from trade repositories, monitoring the interaction between centrally cleared and the non-centrally cleared segments of the market, and observing changes in collateral demand and usage. In addition to that, the bank will have an advisory function. Before prescribing a class of derivatives under the framework, as I've just laid out, the Minister will be required to seek the advice of the bank, as well as from APRA and ASIC. And ASIC will also be required to consult with both the bank and APRA before issuing any derivative transactions rules. So there's a lot of regulatory collaboration and cooperation built into the structure that's now being legislated. And then thirdly, the bank will have an oversight function. In its role in overseeing clearing and settlement facilities operating in Australia, the bank will, with ASIC, advise the Minister, as it currently does, on any licence applications from central counterparties seeking to provide OTC derivatives clearing services in Australia. And once a licence has been granted, the bank will oversee any newly licensed central counterparty against the financial stability standards, as it does with existing licence holders. In parallel with the passage of this legislation through Parliament, the Council agencies monitoring developments in the Australian OTC derivatives markets now to establish whether economic incentives are already beginning to work. A comprehensive survey was circulated to market participants in July, and an analysis of the results of that survey is expected to be published towards the end of this month. The results of that assessment will be an important input into possible recommendations to the government around the mandatory obligations that I've just described. The Australian agencies currently anticipate that additional assessments will be undertaken over the next year or so in order to further monitor the Australian market's progress in making the transition to central clearing, along with the other G20 commitments around OTC derivatives reforms. Even if these assessments conclude that the industry is making adequate progress, the Australian agencies will also continue to examine whether the existence of mandatory obligations could deliver other benefits. For instance, there could potentially be a case to impose a mandatory obligation for central clearing if to do so would make it more likely that other relevant jurisdictions would consider the Australian regime to be sufficiently equivalent to theirs, and therefore reduce the compliance burden for domestic market participants when trading with overseas-based counterparties. The current assessment is likely to confirm the previous position that Australian dollar interest rate swaps, cross-currency swaps and other foreign exchange derivatives are likely to be the priority asset classes for the purpose of meeting the G20 commitments. Developments in these asset classes are likely to be monitored closely in future assessments. In the near term, the priority for any recommendations around mandatory obligations is likely to be in the area of trade reporting. As we've noted elsewhere, the Council agencies regard trade reporting to be not only good practice, but also a means of ensuring the availability of good data to monitor market developments in support of regulators' financial stability and market conduct objectives. However, given the timeframes required to consult on and pass the relevant legislation, it could be some months before a definite move towards mandatory reporting obligations could be made. ASIC would then have to develop the associated derivatives transactions rules, which would be subject to a regulatory impact study and further industry consultation. It would also be necessary to license at least one trade repository to operate in this jurisdiction, and as a result of all of those things, it could be well into next year before any mandate is actually in force. But as I said, all of those things are really ASIC territory. The effectiveness of the regime will also require a range of responses from market participants. If the transition to new arrangements, whether or not triggered by the issuance of a mandate or just by the regulatory incentives that I've talked about, but if all of that is to happen on an acceptable time frame, it means that institutions should already be making the organisational and operational changes that they need to move towards greater use of centralised infrastructure. Based on the Council agency's market assessment and ongoing dialogue with the stakeholders, I'd like to identify, just to close the discussion today, five areas where we see more work being needed to be done. The first of those is that international banks and the large domestic banks have already had to begin making the transition towards the use of centralised infrastructure, in part in response to regulatory reforms already underway in other jurisdictions. And so they're going to need to continue to move in that direction. In the case of central clearing, efforts to date also reflect the economic incentive of emerging price differentials between cleared and non-cleared transactions. This process is ongoing. International banks active in the Australian market are generally already actively clearing Australian dollar denominated interest rate swaps via offshore entities that participate in LCH ClearNet's London-based swap clear service, or CME clearing in the United States. In most cases, the large domestic banks have taken the initial step of concluding client clearing agreements for some of their OTC derivatives business. For several of these institutions, the transition to central clearing for this segment of their business is having major implications for the organisation of their operations. Indeed, these institutions have been confronted with a number of legal and operational issues, such as clearing agreements that often contain more restrictive contractual terms than in their existing ISDA master agreements with bilateral counterparties. A second area where more work is going to be needed relates to smaller and more domestically focused institutions, which are generally at an earlier stage in the overall process. Given the complexity of the required adjustment, these institutions are encouraged to accelerate their transition plans, recognising that these changes are going to take place across the market as a whole over time. In the case of central clearing, it's likely that these institutions will be reliant on a relatively limited number of large and probably international providers of client clearing services. Recognising these dependencies, the council agencies continue to examine matters such as client monies rules so as to ensure adequate protections for Australian institutions. Client monies remains an important area of focus for regulators around the world, and international work in that area is continuing under the auspices of IOSCO. The third area is the fact that new infrastructures are going to be required in the Australian market. The scope for Australian domiciled institutions to access central counterparties directly to clear Australian dollar denominated derivatives clearly is limited by the fact that no central counterparty is yet licensed to provide these services in Australia. Similarly, no trade repository is yet licensed to operate in Australia. ASIC and the Reserve Bank acknowledge their responsibility for dealing with any licence applications received from central counterparties, or once the new regime is in place, trade repositories seeking to provide services in Australia. The large Australian banks continue to discuss operational, legal and commercial terms of access with both domestic and overseas-based central counterparties that are interested in providing services in this area. An important consideration is how any international service would be adapted to the Australian market and time zone, including in relation to the provision of operational support, valuation methodology, margin collection, and collateral eligibility criteria. The tax treatment of payments to an overseas-based central counterparty has also been identified as a potential issue. Ultimately, any central counterparty offering services to Australian domiciled institutions will need to meet the needs of the Australian marketplace, the requirements for cross-border regulatory influence articulated by the Council, and possible future requirements that might be set out in derivatives transactions rules in support of any mandatory clearing obligations that might be brought into effect. The fourth area of further work that I would like to identify relates to the margining of non-centrally cleared OTC derivatives, as called for in the November 2011 summit of G20 leaders in Cannes. In accordance with that request, an international working group led by the Basel Committee on Banking Supervision and IOSCO released in July a set of draft principles for consultation. The principles propose harmonised margining requirements consistent with those in place for central counterparties. While variation margin is already typically exchanged in respect of non-centrally cleared trades, the application of initial margin is less widespread. Implementation of the principles is therefore likely to lead to a substantial increase in demand for collateral assets that are eligible to meet initial margin requirements. The working group has conducted a quantitative impact study to assess the possible magnitude of the increase globally, the results of which will inform the group's final proposal. The council agencies, for their part, have been considering how the new arrangements might be implemented in the Australian context, a key area of concern being the increase in demand for high-quality collateral. And finally, the council agencies will continue to assess how best to enhance transparency in OTC derivatives markets within the parameters of the new regulatory framework. This work will consider the role of platform-based execution, the role that might play in enhancing pre- and post-trade transparency. It will also examine any legal and confidentiality constraints to making aggregated trade repository data on OTC derivatives market activity publicly available. So clearly, having set all of that out, there's a lot of progress that's been made over the last year, but a lot still to be done. While the Council's direction is clear and the legislative process underpinning the framework is well underway, there remains a lot of work ahead to complete the transition, and that applies to market participants, to infrastructure providers, and to the regulators alike. What I've tried to do today is to give you a roundup from the regulator's point of view of where all that is up to, and to indicate where I can, where the process might continue and how that might continue from here. I hope that when this group meets again in a year's time, many of these outstanding issues will have been resolved and we will have a much clearer picture. But I should also say that in all of these processes, consultation between the regulators and the market participants is a very important part of the exercise. We take that very seriously. And so when I come to groups like this, I like to take the opportunity to thank you for the way that you participate in that process and for the feedback that you give us. So once again, it's been a pleasure to talk to you today, and I thank you for listening, and thank ISDA very much for the opportunity. Thanks very much.